I'd be better if the city I lived in wasn't angry at each other and people weren't yelling and screaming. But other than that, pretty good.
Is it the Toronto power play? Is that what's getting people angry?
I think it's a number of things, but that is on the list, yes.
Okay. For Toronto, it's usually either transit, nobody's picking up the garbage, raccoons, or something about the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, so you've ticked two of those boxes. You've ticked transit and Maple Leafs. I'm not really sure about the raccoons or the garbage. Thank goodness I live in a condo.
Oh, there you go. Okay. The Oilers won 1-0 last night, 33 shots against, 14 high dangers, according to Natural Stat Trick. The entire team is being credited with a strong performance, but the shots and high dangers seemed a little high. How much credit does Stuart Skinner get for the 1-0 win, in your opinion?
I think he has to get at least 50% of that credit, right? Obviously, you're kind of looking at it, and I look at the Oilers-King series, and then I look at the Canucks-Pred series, and it's super clear that it's going one way in one series and another way in another series, right? You see Vancouver, they're getting like 13 shots and winning games, which is something that generally is not feasible and not going to repeat itself. In the same way that with the Oilers, you're getting the opposite, right? Where they're giving up a ton, not generating, and they're getting away with it, right? And so, like, I guess, yeah, Stuart Skinner, he deserves some credit. I think the Oilers, what I will say is I think they've done a better job than they have in the regular season of keeping the puck to the outside.
Yeah.
And when you keep the puck to the outside, yes, you're going to give up scoring chances, and you're totally fine to give up a high volume of shots if it's from the outside. So I think they've done a good job mitigating those scoring chances in the really, really dangerous areas. But I still think you want to cut it down to maybe 10 or 11.
And the follow-up is because I was just surprised by how little they were getting done with the puck. They were shooting it out a lot, the Chris Russell special. And I wonder if they're going to have to open it up a little bit, be creative, and you know, add a little risk into it, if, say, Vancouver or Vegas or Colorado, as their spring goes along, because – you know, getting one power play goal works if you get a shutout, but that's not really how the Oilers are wired or how they're deployed.
Yeah, I think it's different team dependent, right? I think when you look at it, Colorado, ever since the game one loss, they've looked absolutely terrifying in the last three games. And I think that's probably not a team that I would want to run up against, generally speaking. But you're absolutely right. You're not going to be able to give up those kinds of scoring chances, because while I do think Adrian Kempe and Anze Kopitar are absolutely fantastic hockey players, those scoring chances have given to Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen find themselves in the back of the net more often than not. And so that is a very, very dangerous game to be playing if you're playing it against Colorado. I think, similarly speaking, if it is Vegas, that's probably not a scoring chance you want to give up to Jack Eichel, Mark Stone, Thomas Hertl, even Jonathan Marchessault for that matter. That's not great. I don't think you want to be trading scoring chances. The Vancouver option would be interesting to me because of the lack of Thatcher Demko. And apparently now Casey DeSmith, although it sounds like he is going to be back post-haste, although I thought Archer Seelongs was fantastic last night, and so maybe he deserves a Game 5 start. I think they can probably afford to trade chances with Vancouver, because while Vancouver has depth, they don't have the nuclear weapons that Edmonton has. And I think from that perspective, Vancouver's defensive core doesn't have what it takes, especially given that Quinn Hughes is playing seriously hurt, from what it sounds like. I think he could afford to trade chances with Vancouver. I don't think you can afford to trade chances with the likes of Nathan MacKinnon or Jack Eichel.
How much of a bullet did Vancouver dodge? I'm not saying even if the puck goes in the empty net that they would have lost the series, but they're up 3-1, which is miles different than 2-2. And with all of the other teams looking at 3-1 now in the conference, how much of a break was that for Vancouver to go up 3-1 along with all the other teams?
Oh, I think enormous. I don't think it can be understated, because when you look at it in the playoffs, it's obviously a war of attrition. And when your best player, and I think it's pretty comfortable to say that Quinn Hughes has been the Canucks' best skater this year, although JT Miller and Brock Besser have been absolutely fantastic through four games, and they deserve a ton of credit. I don't think that this hockey team is where it is without Quinn Hughes. And you can tell very clearly, Frank Saravalli had a great piece on him sort of playing hurt. Vancouver dodging that bullet with the hit post yesterday was massive, because 2-2 means you're guaranteed to be playing six games. And that means that that's at least two more games that Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, who's playing banged up, have to play. And so if you can avoid it, if you can win in five and you avoid traveling back to Nashville and then traveling back to Vancouver, I think that's a huge bullet dodged by the Canucks. And that was a very resilient win. I think quite a big portion of that could be chalked up to luck, obviously, given the goalpost and what transpired after that. But I think they deserve some credit there for battling through and not giving up with 2 minutes left in the game. And it could prove to be an enormous rest, right? I don't think we could be surprised if Edmonton wins in five, but I'm also not going to rule out the fact that LA is going to come out and maybe this thing goes six. And so any level of rest you can get in the playoffs is going to be vitally important, especially when you have guys like Thatcher Demko and Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, who are all battling various injuries to various extents.
Rachel Dory, our guest, Staff and Grab podcast. Want to talk a little bit about the Jets down 3-1. Now they've got, they had a tough matchup for sure. And Makar scoring like he did, that's just degrees of difficulty. But it feels like they were, you know, they had a weird year. Everybody was worried they were going to lose their free agents. They got them back. They made a really nice trade with LA. Going into the playoffs, things looked very good. Colorado, you know, scored a bunch and lost game one. And it's all kind of fallen apart like a cheap suit. I've owned cheap suits. I know what it's like. But is there any part of the Jets that is hopeful right now? Or is this just fait accompli? Colorado's got it going on.
Did anybody have Connor Hellebuck giving up five goals on four straight games on their bingo card? Because
no.
I definitely didn't. I don't, right? I don't think when we were sitting here talking 2 weeks ago, we did not have Connor Hellebuck with an under 900 save percentage on our list of things that we thought was going to occur in the playoffs. And so I think that's been a problem. Now, by no means am I going to lay this at the feet of Connor Hellebuck. The team in front of him has not been very good over the last three games. And I think they'd be the first people to tell you that. If you look at what Rick Bonus said in his press conference, he was pretty harsh in his assessment. And I thought it was a very accurate assessment of how his team has performed over the last couple games. Losing Brendan Dillon hurts, obviously, but not to the extent that you should be coming apart at the seams and surrendering the types of scoring chances that you're surrendering. And obviously with Cale Makar, I mean, you brought him up. I know Quinn Hughes is going to win the Norris, and I know Roman Josi is going to be up there, and they both had fantastic seasons. But oh my goodness, Cale Makar is still the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. Like I know he said he got lucky, but at some point, and it kind of where he takes the puck, kind of makes a move at the last minute to shake Gus Nyquist. But if that puck bobbles over his stick, as opposed to just kind of hit the heel and settle down, that puck's out of the zone and they don't tie the game. So you got to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good. And I think both Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar were great examples of that. I think when you look at this, Colorado has seemed to have found their game. Alexander Georgiev has seemed to have calmed the waters a little bit. And that's really all Colorado needs. They have the offensive prowess that they can just go full send and probably score five goals a game, which Georgiev only has to give up four. And if he can manage to just not give up more than four, Colorado is going to be a problem for whoever they play. And that includes Vegas or Dallas.
Everybody except Vegas Golden Knights fans wants Dallas to win because they want a deep series between two powerhouse teams. Do you see Dallas winning tonight, and do they have a chance in this series?
Oh, I think it's tough, right? I think when you look at it, first of all, Wyatt Johnson, he was good last year in the playoffs. He was probably the best player on the ice in game three. Like, he was absolutely incredible. And for a 20-year-old to be having that kind of impact, that's a problem. And we talked about this last week. Prince in that series was going to be depth. And if Dallas was going to win, it was going to be on the strength of their depth. Well, Wyatt Johnston was a fantastic example of that, that when Dallas's depth really steps up, Vegas has problems. And even though it was a super competitive game and it's been a pretty competitive series in the sense of like just play and runs of play, I think Dallas can make this a series. I'm having trouble squaring Vegas losing two in a row at home. I've been in that barn for the cup clinching game. I know how loud it can be. I know what the atmosphere is like. That is a distinct advantage. And so I think we're kind of in a situation where I could see Vegas winning tonight and Dallas winning game five, and then maybe Dallas pulls out game six. But I think we're in a scenario here where Vegas taking the first two games in Dallas presented Dallas with a really big challenge. I'm not going to rule out that they may come back, but I certainly wouldn't be laying my money down on it.
What's wrong with the Maple Leafs power play?
Can I say what isn't wrong with it? Because that list is shorter. Honestly, Rotai, their special teams, their penalty kill is horrendous. Their power play is, there's not an appropriate word that you can say on the airwaves that would describe that power play. I think part of it is Austin Matthews is very clearly ill. That guy played through an enormous injury last year in the playoffs when he should not have been playing. So for the doctors to have pulled him in game four tells me that he's not up to snuff. And when he's not up to snuff, your power play can't click, because that is a weapon where if Boston knows they don't necessarily have to respect it in the way that they usually would, that allows them to be on other players. Mitch Marner, outside of the assist he had in game three and the goal he had in game four, has done effectively nothing. William Nylander, I thought, given it was his first game back, was fine. He wasn't great. John Tavares hasn't been great. And so I think when you look at the power play, you look at everyone that's on that unit, and none of them are playing well right now. So I'm not exactly surprised that the power play is not clicking. And the other situation you have is Marner missed time with a high ankle sprain. Then you got Nylander missing time. So that power play as a unit hasn't really played together in probably 6 weeks. And so there's going to be some rust. It's obviously comes at probably the worst. But at the same time, when you've got a power play that has nearly $50 million worth of players on it, I expect you to be able to make a 10-foot pass. Like, that is the bare minimum expectation. And you look at the Oilers' power play, and yes, they didn't run into the same injury trouble towards the end of the year that the Maple Leafs have. But at no point do I watch the Oilers' power play and go, they can't even complete a pass, or they can't even break the puck in. That's where we're at with the Maple Leafs right now. They can't break the puck in. They can't make a pass. They can't recover a puck after they've shot the puck. And so none of it is working. And it's just, I'm not even sure there's anything you can do.
Wow. That's well done. No wonder Toronto's arguing with themselves. Rachel, thank you. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right. There you go. Rachel Dorey.